This is the son of PCJ.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure.
When I got interested in UFOs back in the late 50s, the focus of attention was Kenneth Arnold, the pilot who coined the expression flying saucers, referring to his sighting of airborne discs while flying his plane one night in the United States in 1947. The ufological field of that era became dominated by the so-called contactees, that is, those who claimed to have actually met the space people. The big names then were George Adamski, Howard Menger, and Truman Bethrum. Many others followed. The stories they told were sometimes really wild and covered everything from a quick trip by saucer to Venus while enjoying a banquet on board to intimate relations with alien females. In any case, these contacts were predominantly loving and benevolent and in no way cause for concern. One day, the space people would manifest their presence in a big way and all our mundane problems would be over. Well, judging from what I saw and heard at the UFO Congress in Zurich, the accent is a bit more esoteric and New Age-oriented than before, and the personalities may have changed, but the basic message hasn't.
Also das Christusbewusstsein für unser Sonnensystem kommt von Sirius, Flug nach Sirius, 24 Stunden auf Sirius, Vegetation prachtvoller wie hier auf Erden, Obst in größerem Verhältnis.
The Christ consciousness for our solar system comes from the star Sirius. I myself have been to Sirius for a period of 24 hours. It has splendid vegetation, much richer than we know on Earth. The fruit there are gigantic compared with what we know. The grapes are especially large. The horses on Sirius are white and just a little bigger than the ones on Earth. And the people are very beautiful, tall and blonde with no blemishes. These people are intellectually much further advanced than us. For example, their children have the same IQ at the age of 10 as we have at the age of 40 or 50. The architecture is Mediterranean, half Greek, half Roman. The spirituality of the people on Sirius is enormous. They took me into their great hall of wisdom, where I saw endless volumes of triangular-shaped books devoted to spirituality and religion, including the Vedas and the Bible. Sirius was in direct contact with the early Egyptians and inspired their civilization. It's a fact that the pyramids are all directed towards Sirius. One day, the people of Sirius will transmit an important message to all of the people on Earth.
Dann eine Botschaft erhalten, die hier auf Erden irgendwann einmal übermittelt werden sollte, direkt von Sirius an die Erdenbewohner.
That was German contactee and astral voyager Karl-Heinz Bierlich, who is also the founder of the Brotherhood of Light Church in Berlin, based on his experiences on Sirius. He tells his story in minute detail, and he's deadly serious about it, if you'll forgive the pun. But Karl-Heinz Bierlich was by no means unique. In a prominent place between the stalls featuring stones, minerals, and mystical literature was another group of people from northern Germany. They all wore white robes and blue headbands that represented their connection with the Sentina, the residents of a planet called Materia, who are working with the Spirit of Jesus Christ to bring better times to the earth. Klaus Henning was their spokesman, and did his best to explain their activities in English.
This is a planet in the Alpha Centauri system, and they are coming with love and peace.
They are Christians. They are Christ-conscious, as you describe it?
They are very connected to Jesus Christ.
In what way exactly? How are they connected? Through sympathy or somehow materially?
They are knowing them personally. Jesus Christ now lives in an astral form, and the Zantina lives at another vibration level, and they are able to bridge to the level of Jesus Christ to communicate with them.
The astral body or astral projection is something that not many of us can do. It is to allow one level of our consciousness, the non-physical, to project itself to any desired location. Where have you been in the astral field? I mean, can you give us an example?
In the starships and at the planet Venus and Metaria, their home planet.
What kind of messages, what kind of communications have you received from these people?
They told us that the Earth have a big problem, and that results from the doing and thinking of humankind here.
You mean we're thinking too negatively or too destructively?
Yes, it's correct.
Can we do anything about it? I mean, is it too late?
Yes, we must change our life to live in love, harmony, peace. Then all other things will change again.
And these are the people who control the flying saucers, the UFOs? That's their mission, to try to help us?
Not all.
The ones you're in contact with are helpful?
Yes.
Are you optimistic that we can save the planet and ourselves?
With their help, yes.
I hope so. Thank you very much. All of this New Age talk linking flying saucers, extraterrestrials, and religion is really not new at all. In fact, it goes back to the Vedas of India, the 6,000-year-old collection of sacred writings that serve as the basis of Hindu religion and culture. The Swiss Vedic scholar and writer Ronald Zürer teaches Vedic philosophy in Berlin and was a featured speaker in Zurich. According to him, the Vedas take the idea of visitations from outer space in their stride.
Actually, the term UFO or unidentified flying object does not occur in the Vedic scriptures. These things are just described. The other creatures are described there, the outer space people and where they live, what planets they come from. And it is described that since time immemorial, people have been visiting this Earth planet from different planets. Some, they may come from faraway planets. Others, they may come from very near.
But they say that other planets are not inhabited. I mean, there's no evidence of life on Mars or Venus or Jupiter or any of our neighboring planets. Where do they come from, then?
I'm not so sure about there's no life on Mars and Jupiter. It's just different life. And our science tends to just speculate that whatever physical and non-physical phenomena are to be observed on the Earth, it must be the same on older planets, which is not proven.
In other words, these people might be just as physical and material as we are, except that they're on a different vibration or a different frequency of existence that we cannot perceive. Is that what you mean?
You can say frequency or vibration, or you can use the term dimension, which is a term we find in one way in the Vedic scriptures, that we are living in a multidimensional cosmos, and humans are just able to perceive three dimensions. So there are other dimensions. They are here, but we just don't perceive them.
What is the purpose of the visitations? Are they here just out of curiosity? Are they here to teach us? Are they here to colonize us? Are they here to destroy us?
Everything is possible. It depends on the mentality. As I said, there are different civilizations in the
just like people on Earth, with different intentions.
The good and bad ones out there as well, like here. Those who really want to help us, they're in the majority.
a very hot topic here in Zurich and in general in ufology, the question of abductions. Many people have reported being kidnapped or abducted by saucers, and they report having gone through everything from banquets on board, where they had a wonderful time, to being operated on physically, even having sexual intercourse with space people. How much of this are you willing to accept?
These things definitely happen. Just look what people are doing amongst each other here, human beings, or what we are doing to the animals. These are the same phenomena. So it is not unthinkable that people from outer space with the same mentality as our people here have do these things. And in fact, it happens all the time, I would say.
Swiss Vedic scholar Ronald Zürer. Now, if what you've heard so far is too much for you, please switch off, because we're not finished yet. Still with us? Good. There's a respectable school of modern psychiatry that holds that many character traits and unexplained psychological problems in the individual are the result of experiences in another life. In what's called regression therapy, the patient is placed under hypnosis and taken back into previous lives until they relive the event or events that caused their trauma in their present life. Trutz Hardo is a German writer who became involved in reincarnation and regression research in the United States. He underwent regression therapy himself and is certain of its validity. For some time now, he's been working with people who claim to have been in contact with extraterrestrials or even abducted by them. One of Trutz Hardo's conclusions is the probability that all of us have lived somewhere else in the universe sometime in our eternal spiritual lives.
Many people who live today in former lives have been having had encounters with UFO peoples, perhaps 500 years ago, 2000 years ago, whenever it was. And then, because in our mind we have gathered all the information of the former lives, and it's there, and then they will tell what they encountered. I think we are indestructible, and we live for millions and millions forever. And perhaps we have been on Earth 100,000 years ago at Atlantis. In the meantime, we have been perhaps for thousands of years on another planet and on another planet, and now we are here again. So I think we might come back on Earth when we have finished that cycle of reincarnations, perhaps in 500,000 years again to live here. Here, if the Earth is still ready for the purpose of living.
So in short, as far as you're concerned, life on Earth is not unique.
No, it's not unique. Before we came to the Earth, I'm sure we have been on other planets or other dimensions.
So theoretically, we could go so far back in previous lives that we wind up on another planet?
Yes.
The German writer and metaphysician Trutz Hardo. There's no doubt, to put it politely, that a lot of what's claimed in the world of ufology is nothing more than fraud, lies, misconceptions, and wishful thinking. But as the famous U.S. Air Force study, Project Blue Book, concluded in the 1950s and 60s, after careful analysis, a small number of cases of sightings of unidentified flying objects cannot be conventionally explained. There are a lot of people in this world who are critical and well-educated, and they believe in the existence of flying saucers and visitations from other parts of the universe. And for those who remain skeptical, Ronald Zürer gives Shakespeare a Vedic twist.
From my point of view, there is only two kinds of people in this connection. Those who know that there are UFOs and that other civilizations exist, and those who didn't think about it yet. So as soon as you start investigating and you're not limiting your own perception by some three-dimensional rules, as long as you're not limiting your own consciousness, then you'll find all kinds of things. So it's not a question of believing anything. Believe you can whatever you will. Whatever you want, you can believe, but it doesn't change reality. So I actually consider myself a scientist in that sense, that I'm trying to find out what is truth and what is not truth. It's just that I'm not limited to three dimensions in my search.
Ronald Zürer, speaking at the World UFO Congress in Zurich, where the sky was definitely not the limit.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on their Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
There are many visitors, obviously, who come to Switzerland. This is a very popular destination for visitors from all over the world. Many, many ways to see this country. And, of course, the classic way would be by train or by boat. Switzerland has probably Europe's best organized public transport system. But you know, there's another way to see Switzerland, and that is from the bird's eye view. No, I don't mean in a commercial airliner they're flying over the country. I mean getting into a small plane or a helicopter, or how about a hot air or even gas balloon, doing it that way. We have the man with all the answers how we best do that. He is Felix Kieser, who is the Secretary General of the Aero Club of Switzerland. If he doesn't know about this, then nobody does. Mr. Kieser, welcome to Switzerland in Sound. First of all, quite a basic question here. We assume that it's fairly easy to see Switzerland by small plane, helicopter, or balloon. Is that in fact the case? Is it easy to do?
Yes. Affirm, as the pilots would say. We have got quite a few airfields in Switzerland, more than 40 small fields, and whether it be within the Alps or further down, we have a lot of occasions to do that.
This, of course, from a pilot's point of view, is a really, it's a challenging country with all of the mountains. We have special weather patterns here, microclimates. These pilots must be pretty good. They're pretty well trained. We're not talking about the old barnstorming pilots of years ago. These guys know what they're doing.
Yes, and we have just to demonstrate what it means. We have special ALP instruction lessons that all pilots that fly in Switzerland have to undergo, and the foreign pilots who come to Switzerland, they do first get instructions how to fly within the Alps and into the Alps in case they do not perform that in their own country.
So anyone who will take a small plane ride or a helicopter ride or a balloon, they can rest assured they're in the best possible hands.
I can assure you, yes, we are very regulated. That is certainly the case.
And, of course, here in Switzerland, we have to remember that there's a militia army or air force. There's a semi-professional air force in this country. I imagine some of your membership and some of these pilots probably also are military pilots at the same time. They know the mountains. They know the terrain very well.
Exactly. That's quite the case. A lot of them come from the military, are still in the military. All the basic training was in the military.
They don't get any better. I've seen some of these guys in action. It's amazing. Also on the internet, you can see some breathtaking videos of Swiss Air Force pilots and what they do. It's absolutely incredible, and anyone interested can find that. Mr. Kieser, let's look at the flights themselves. I mean, Switzerland is a small country, but extremely diverse. If we look at the geography, can you say which are the most popular flights among visitors to this country?
Of course, to the Alps or within the Alps, but of the other places, very nice to see. But most popular, to answer your question, yes, these are the Alps. And within the Alps, it's probably the Matterhorn, the old Matterhorn, though there are many other places that are spectacular at the Matterhorn.
I can imagine around Lucerne, it would be the Pilatus, and in the Bernese Oberland, it would be the Jungfrau, and so on, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And the advantage is if you come out from here, then you all your way along to the Matterhorn. Well, if we stay with the Matterhorn, then you have a spectacular scenery all the way up there.
Is it possible, incidentally, to do mountain hopping trips, for example, to go over the mountains to neighboring Italy or perhaps to Germany or France? Is that also done?
Certainly. And one popular route is coming from here, the countryside, going to the Alps and then take a break in Sion, for example, or Geneva, and then go back, meaning taking a break, landing at an airport there and having what we used to call the $100 hamburger in the States to go back.
A very good friend of mine was a glider pilot here in Switzerland. He did also motor gliders, and I had some wonderful times with him. It's so breathtaking, and we mustn't forget that in addition to the classic small motorized planes, also gliders are fit into this. So we talk about small motor aircraft, light aircraft, in other words. We talk about gliders, helicopters, balloons. This is quite an assortment of hardware here. Can you say, Mr. Kieser, which type of aircraft is best suited for which type of sightseeing?
Well, I would just start with a very good idea. You just mentioned that the sailplane, it's just that it's only for one person that can do it. So you cannot go together with your friends, but you have the pilot and yourself. That is really something special to glide among the mountains, as you just pointed out. Then, of course, there are the other means, the other aircrafts and balloons, the small ones, the bigger ones. From the small one that is probably the most popular, the Piper and the Cessnas and so on, but you have the small helicopters also that are more affordable than the big ones. And then you have the balloon, the hot air or even gas, which has become rare. But that is something very spectacular to do and really amazing, the balloon rides.
Well, the balloon, of course, that must be the great classic way. I mean, we go back to the grand days of the grand tours, seeing the mountains by balloon. You bring your champagne along and you sit and just look at God's country. You need some time for a balloon trip, don't you?
Exactly. You need the weather, the pilot and time, and then if you talk about the old times, we have to mention the gas balloon, which has, as I said, become very rare, but also very expensive, we have to be honest.
Let's look at the cost for a moment. Does one have to see his banker first before you go on one of these trips, or is it affordable?
No, I think it's sufficient to consult your family and take it along. So we are talking from, I would say, 100 francs up, of course. If you have 100 francs for a helicopter, that will be a short jump you do. But with the four-seater small airplane with 100 francs, you do already a 30-minute trip. Mm-hmm. But I would say from 150 francs on, you have a beautiful sight. And as far as ballooning is concerned, I would add up that to 200. But the average is for the motor aircraft. For a sightseeing into the Alps, I would say 250 or 200 to 250, about an average. With a helicopter, it adds that up to, or goes up to 350, and the balloon also around that.
Now, are these half-hour segments we're talking about or full hour?
The average one I was mentioning now, I counted an hour. That, mm-hmm. I think, is an average of a sightseeing flight.
Well, that's a pretty fair
ride
flight.
The
yeah.
balloon, yes.
Yeah, that's a good flight. Incidentally, before I forget, years and years ago, as a young reporter for the International Radio, I got an interesting assignment. You will know the name T. Rufer, one of Switzerland's most famous glacier pilots. I think he used to have a Piper Cub or something along
those
lines.
Most probably, yes.
Yeah, and he would actually land and take off on glaciers. Is this still done?
Yes.
That you can still do that?
Of course, yes. And that is really amazing to do that, yes.
Yeah.
There are not so many glacier pilots. The they demand a lot of experience. There's a lot of experience, and there are not so many glaciers again who are allowed to land on. Mm-hmm. But that is something really special.
And that's a very high specialty too. I mean, you really have to know what you're doing.
Exactly, and it's still done, yes.
Yeah.
It needs a lot of loadage and a lot of skill.
It's getting exciting. I'd like to get one of these flights myself again. I have one last question for you, Mr. Keyser. What about private pilots who are licensed in their home countries? And they say, well, you know, that would be a great idea, but I can fly my own plane. Can they do that here?
Yes. Most pilots fly internationally, fly in other countries, so they are allowed to do that. And the international regulation has been valid for since the beginning of flying almost. There have been agreements. So that means that we can fly into and out of other countries with foreign licenses, most of the pilots. Of course, there are also licenses that only apply for the home country. Then what I would recommend to foreign pilots, if they want to do it commercially and add and make really make it attractive and go to public and announce themselves, then I would recommend they check the validity of their license and their activity with FOCA, our national regulator.
You mean if a commercial pilot wants to work as a commercial pilot here, this requires a special agreement. But an ordinary sport or private pilot, as we understand it, the classic Cessna or Tri-Pacer or Piper Flyer or Mooney, he can come here with his national license and it will be recognized.
Of course, yes.
Sounds very exciting. I used to fly a lot with my father. Back where I grew up, and I understand you were there too, I grew up in New Jersey, outside New York, and you lived in Long Island on the other
side. Exactly, that's where I got my first flying lessons, and my license, by the way.
Isn't that something? It really is a small world. We used to fly out of sometimes Teterboro.
Teterboro.
When it was still a very small, quiet airport. Now it's very commercial. And then Morristown. You probably know Morristown.
Yes, of course. When you mention it now, I remember that it was part of my lessons, of my landings. Yes.
Those were the days when you actually were allowed to fly right over Manhattan. I think that's not done anymore.
I still could do that. Yes, I still could do that.
Yeah, but
flying out of Long Island. Yes.
I think, though, you need permission and clearance before you can do that these days.
It's, of course you have. Of course, and the radio communication is part of the flying.
That's right. That's right. Felix Keyser, the Secretary General of the Aero Club of Switzerland, with some expert, well-informed information for those who would like to see Switzerland from up there. On your next visit, some great ideas. We'll also have a few links for you here on the website. Mr. Keyser, thank you very much, and of course I have to wish you happy landings.
Okay, I thank you very much, and wish everybody flights over and into Switzerland.
Unforgettable it will be. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay.
For Switzerland in Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.